Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 21st, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Jesse Kaur of Kaur Brewing and Distilling in Springdale, Arkansas, takes us on a tour of his expanded production facility. If you remember, we visited with Jesse a year ago, and a lot has happened since then. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, don't go to Amazon first. Go to us first, basicbrewing.com. Click on the Amazon link on the right-hand side of our page, and it will take you to Amazon where you can shop as usual, and we will get a cut of whatever you buy. It won't cost you any extra. That's the beauty of it. And you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too, that work in a similar fashion. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at basicbrewingshop.com. In the front of the book is a calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. And the good thing about that calendar is that it is blank. So you have a full year of calendar pages, 12 months of calendar pages. So no matter when you start your brewing year, you will have a full year of brew. And there is a room in the back to log the details of up to 50 batches of brew. If you have a Fitchy brew, well, just let me know. After hearing our grain milling show, let's look in the mailbag. I'm in a panic because it's snowing outside, and, you know, when it snows here in Arkansas, people panic and go to the store and clean the store out of bread, toilet paper, and milk in that order. Anyway, after I'm snow crazy. Taking a look in the mailbag, after hearing our grain milling show, listener Steve wrote in with this, and I don't know where Steve is from. Steve says, I was listening to the January podcast on milling grain. Although I appreciated the content, I thought one thing was lacking. All the examples given used parallel cylinder grinders, mostly power-based. I use a Corona mill. I understand that on some forums people badmouth this tool, but I've found it to work very well for me because it gives me control, something the power units often don't do well. Steve says the pros to using a Corona mill, probably the least expensive unit on the market. As it is the slowest, it provides great ability for adjusting as different specialty grains are ground. Note different malts have different optimal gaps. It is healthier in that you get a workout. Okay, this is stretching it, Steve says. The cons to using a Corona mill, users need to be careful not to grind too fine or you get flour and astringency. The grinding at bigger gap sizes can reduce your efficiency. It is slower than power grinders, and you get a workout, which is, I guess, is a plus and a minus. Steve says, first of all, you can use a Corona mill and get great results. Much of what I see on forums is that people say that due to the shredding action of a Corona mill, you will get astringency. While this can be true if you grind too fine, it's also true with all the power units as well. In both cases, it's usually when people try to get too much efficiency out of their grind. I back off and aim for 70%. You mentioned gap size on the parallel units. I think on a Corona, it's important to go a little wider. I use about 2 millimeters for MO, I believe that's Maris Otter, and adjust a little based on the grain you are grinding. I always grind about a handful of any new grain, make adjustments, then continue. Not for bragging, but for credentials, I am a BJCP judge, certified, have been brewing for more than 20 years, and just in the last year have won 8 medals. Wow, congratulations. I may get marked down for style differences, but haven't been criticized for astringency issues in years. Steve says, my point, sometimes the simplest units are the best ones. I brew 5-gallon, usually less than 1060 beers. I might change my mind if I was brewing 10-gallon barley wines. In any case, I thought I would contribute. By the way, Charlie Papazian used to use a Corona mill. How bad could it be? Yeah, I heard that Charlie used a Corona mill. I don't know if he still does. We might have even talked about that to Charlie when we visited his house a few years ago and saw his home brewery. How's that for name dropping? however, I haven't seen a Corona mill in use myself in person. But that does sound like a fun side-by-side experiment, or at least a demonstration. Appreciate the info, Steve. This comes from Wolfgang in Raleigh, North Carolina. Wolfgang says, I have written a small command line interface, or CLI program, in Python for developing beer recipes. It takes a plain text file as input, which lists things such as your target gravity and percentage of grains, and outputs a recipe for you as plain text to the command line. I prefer a workflow that allows me to use CLI programs as much as possible. I've developed the program to the point that it works and allows me to replicate recipes that I have formulated by hand. However, I'm convinced that it could be a better tool. To that end, I've released the source code under the GPL V3 open source license and am searching for like-minded homebrewing coders to help me develop this program further. So, if you share Wolfgang's passion for the command line interface and want to help him refine his application, drop me a line and I can get you guys talking together. You can find me at james@basicbrewing.com or just use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And I hope it's Wolfgang instead of Wolfgang. I'm a little self-conscious. Somebody wrote me an email saying that my pronunciation of German terms needs a little work. So maybe that's a show. Maybe we can get Kai back on here and he can teach us how to speak German properly. You have to remember, I'm from Arkansas. I'm doing good. Okay, if you remember, not saying that people with accents are any less smart than anybody else. It's just that we have the reputation for... Anyway, if you remember, Andy Sparks and I visited Core Brewing a little over a year ago. And at that time, Jesse Core was in the fundraising mode and at that time brewing on a 40-gallon homebrew system. Well, a lot has changed since then, so I thought it was time that we revisited. Well, Jesse Core, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
I'm excited to be here. It's a lot of things have changed since the last time we were here, so I'm happy to have you guys back.
Yeah, now, when Andy and I were here almost exactly a year ago. And I'm having trouble getting my bearings around here because things have happened.
We have been very, very busy boys this year. So, but it's exciting. It's been a ton of work, you know, working every day. But, you know, it's a passion. I'm sure everybody out there can relate. And it doesn't feel like work when you're having fun.
Now, here we are. We're starting in the grain room here.
Right. This is dry storage. This is where... I love the way our buildings are laid out because it's very linear, and brewing in a lot of senses is linear, and we're able to move from one process to another, and that's the way the building's laid out. So we have our deliveries in one side of the building, and then we have our distributors pick up on the other side of the building at the end of the process. So yeah, they deliver all the raw material to this door. Well, dry raw material. All the cold stuff goes toward the cold room, and we'll visit and talk about that in a minute.
So remind us where we were at this time last year. You guys were brewing on what, a 40 gallon, yeah, it's a homebrew system basically, a 40 gallon system.
That's our little pilot system, and you know, it's REMS capable, and it's a professional homebrew system, so to speak, and we love that. I mean, I love that guy because we're able to, like, we just brewed up Arkansas molasses black porter that we're going to throw in the tasting room. And you know, it's cool because we can see what people like in our tasting room. And if they like it, we'll put it in draft. We'll put it in kegs. If they like that, we'll put it in 22-ounce bombers. If they like that, then maybe we'll even go to canning.
An Arkansas molasses. Would say it again?
Arkansas molasses black porter. So it's the category would be robust porter, but we brewed it with Arkansas molasses here, and I hope it tastes as good as it smelled when we were brewing it. So I'm excited, and we also brewed up a wee heavy scotch this week too. So, you know, that's what's so cool about craft brewing is we can try anything we want, you know, and if it goes well, we'll make more of it.
Now talk about that molasses recipe, because I recently brewed a couple of batches of Belgianish beers with molasses, and I talked about it on Facebook, and some people were saying, "Oh, I didn't have good luck with molasses." Talk about your recipe.
Well, I mean, again, this is just like a home brewer. I'm giving it a go and seeing how it tastes. Molasses is tricky because too much of it can kind of overpower the beer flavor and take away from the quality. So that's why we have this pilot system. We're gonna just keep adding a little bit more and a little bit more or a little less until we get the type of flavor profile that we want. And then once we have our flavor profile, it's a matter of scaling it up to the big guy in here.
So what kind of molasses did you get?
My Uncle Kit is doing a lot of our new product development here, and he went over and got some West Mountain molasses. So it's not the Black Strap or anything like that. You want to get, just like any of your other products you're using for your brewing, if it's too strong in the flavor, which the Black Strap can be, then that could overpower your beer quickly. So we just got some really good organic Arkansas molasses to add to the batch.
And you want to stay away from molasses probably that has sulfur in it, or is there's been sulfur used in the process?
Yeah, yes, that's a good point too. So I mean, it's a little more expensive going down that road, but you know, that's what we're about, craft beer. We're not afraid to spend a little bit more money, maybe getting a Maris Otter or some other really specialty product, because we're all about quality. You know, it's a passion for us.
You got your marketing hat on.
Right on.
So what do we got here?
This is our Willy Wonka right here. This is, you know, our brew house is heated through steam, and as everybody knows out there, the difference between 150 and 155 in a mash is a different product. So by using steam and all our vessels being jacketed, we're able to get it within our differential is very small. We can keep within a 1 to 2 degrees of what we want for our mash, because it heats the vessel on all sides. Whereas a heat plate on the bottom, unless you have a very good agitator that mixes it correctly, then you're going to have a higher temperature on bottom, a lower temperature on top. So this makes it, this is just wonderful. This is one of the favorite things I like about this brewery.
What capacity is that boiler? It's pretty big.
It's pretty big. I couldn't tell you the capacity of it. We can get up to about 15 psi for our steam pressure, and that does really well for us. The 15 psi allows us to get up to a nice rolling boil.
I know nothing about boilers. It's green, so there.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, that makes two of us. You know, that's why, you know, Multicraft is one of our partners in this, and so we're able to. They installed this thing. That's what they do. I mean, I'm not a boiler tech. That's what we have to pay these guys for. But I feel like the capital investment is worth it, because we discussed it in our last time here. One of the biggest challenges you have from moving up into professional brewing is just maintaining is keeping the beer to spec. If you have one beer, making it repeatable time after time after time is not easy. The steam boiler gets us closer to that ultimate goal.
Boilers can be scary, so you got to have somebody who knows what they're doing.
And we're on Multicraft's campus, and you know, and so if anything goes wrong, they're right here across the parking lot from us, and they can get a boiler tech over here in no time.
Now, who's Multicraft?
Multicraft is one of the larger contract manufacturing companies in the state. They've been very successful. Multicraft is a fantastic organization with a lot of professionals in terms of electrical, and I mean they install their entire brewery, from plumbing to the PLC and the control panel to the boilers to you name it, and they installed it. They got the guys to get it done.
So they got a lot of experience in these industrial applications, and so probably no sweat for them.
It was no sweat for them. I mean, they've, you know, I think a 4-vessel 25-barrel system's big, but they've seen much, much, much bigger. You know, so.
So it is. So we're walking toward the new system, and you said it is a 25-barrel
system. Four-vessel, 25-barrel system. We have a mill here, and our cellar men are very happy that they're not having to lug grain up the stairs and dumping the mash tun. So we have a double auger that augers the grain up into the mill, and then ultimately augers it up into the mash tun, which, I don't know, that's probably 11 feet high or 9 feet high. So rather than walking it up to the platform, it just gets augered up there for them.
Lazy.
Yeah, right. So it's four vessel, 25 barrels. So that allows us to do continuous brewing instead of bouncing back and forth between two vessels. We're able to go straight from mash to lauter to boil to whirlpool and keep pumping out some beer.
So does this make you the largest capacity brewer in the area, or
I think so. I'm you know, I
can't remember what Raybox is with the Saddleback. I can't remember what his is.
I'm really not for sure. I mean, what I did with this is I got us a brew house that I feel like will help us achieve our long term goals, and that's what we got right here. And this is our control panel, so we're able to see what's going on within the brewery. Whatever's happening within the fermentation, whatever's going on within the mash tun. And this is something that I'm excited about because we're able to, again, dial in our process, and that's what it takes at this level.
Where did you get your system?
We got it from China, as a matter of fact. I flew over to China and inspected the equipment, and that is a long, long flight. And I turned it around in 4 days,
God.
So I flew out there, stayed 2 days, and flew back. I was pretty whipped by the time I got back, and they did a really good job. Multicraft was very impressed with the vessels, and they did a very good job. So I'm very happy with those guys.
I recently went over to Fossil Cove, and they've got some. Ben's got some new fermenters, bigger fermenters from China as well, and I think some of Steve Raybock's equipment, Saddleback, is from China as well. So it seems like that's a common route nowadays.
Well, I mean, you don't have a choice. I mean, it's a capital-intensive business. I mean, we don't really have a choice if we can get the same equipment for less. You know, one, I have shareholders. I have to be fiscally responsible. And if I can get the product for 60% less or 50% less, then got to do what I got to do. I mean, ideally, I'd prefer to just buy it next door, but I wouldn't have a four-vessel, 25-barrel brew house.
And there's probably not a lot of equipment this size available used in the market.
It's, used equipment from what I've seen, because it's stainless, it's copper, it's all these things. I mean, that is a very high-priced commodity, and there's a lot of demand in the brewing industry, so used equipment is just not readily available. So it just made sense for me to buy new and tailor-fit it to this building.
So walk us up onto
sure.
the platform
you got
here
it.
And... We're walking past the grain mill. It's a big. It's also green. trying to be as technical as I can about these specifications.
All right.
This is labeled. It says mash tun, so we know it's a mash tun.
So this mash tun's done very well. Again, steam jacketed. You know, helps us really nail our target. Right next to it, this is our HLT, our hot liquor tank. So we have treated, filtered water, and they're ready to brew. And one of the things when the different systems is trying to find the proper strike temperatures for your grain. And this allows us to dial it in perfectly because we're able to mix the waters that's coming in, and we can hit our target temperature. And with the steam jacket, the temperature does not fluctuate much. It's kind of set it and forget it and come back when the timer goes off.
Now, are all four of these, they look similar size? Or
this is 25, 25, 27, 25.
So 25, 25 on the mash tun and the lauter tun.
27 on the boil and 25 on the whirlpool.
Okay. You've got to have some headspace on the kettle.
Right on. So after we go with mash, we go over here to the lauter, which is I had them install a half-inch stainless steel chain on the bottom of this, so that way we get if we need it to agitate the lauter, then we can do it. And this has behaved very well. I mean, this motor is pretty strong if we need to be able to turn 1,500 pounds of grain around. But typically, we haven't had to do it. We've done it with the pumps in place. It's been It's been pretty sweet. It takes a couple hours for us to do the runoff. You know, one of the hardest things with this is just being patient. You know, you just want to transfer it over and be done with it, but you start losing efficiency.
Yeah, and a few points of efficiency at this scale is money.
Is money in the bank, and that's why our goal here is continually trying to improve the efficiency. So that's an area of improvement for us.
When you were a home brewer, you worried about efficiency a little bit, but it was more for bragging rights probably than anything.
Yeah. Well, here, I mean, that comes down to dollars. And so it's, you know, that's definitely something we continually improve on.
What do you think are the most important factors that you've seen on this scale as far as efficiency is concerned?
What's helped you the crush most? Is definitely important. You know, when you get a new mill, it's not easy to find the proper crush, and there's a little bit of work to be done on finding a little trial and error, because this is a new system. I mean, we're acquainting ourselves with it as well. So I feel like we have a good crush now. The grain, the husks are intact. It looks good. One batch we had a little too fine of a crush, which we all know what happened then.
Little chains came out.
Yeah, the chains worked well at that point. And then one batch, this pump's very strong in the first one of the batches, and it created a little too much suction. So again, that produced a similar problem. So we've added essentially a throttle to that. So now we've got it dialed in to where we're able to slowly and efficiently transfer the work over, and I feel like we're starting to see some real improvements in efficiency.
My nose is running. It's probably the grain. It's between the weather fluctuating 30 degrees.
I don't even know what time of year it is right now. This is the boil kettle. I mean, that's, you know, nothing particular. I mean, we've all seen a boil kettle, but again, what I like about this guy is that it does run on steam, and we get a very good rolling boil from this. And I've been really happy with this. The whirlpool over here. Has been beneficial. On some of the other brewing systems I've worked with, you know, you start dealing with solid matter and the heat exchanger and things of that nature. But this provides us very good separation from our hops, as long from the bright beer. So it runs through nicely through our heat exchanger, which is right there at your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And this heat exchanger uses city water, which right now is pretty good. I mean, I guess it's 50 degrees, but it also uses our glycol system to cool it down if we're wanting to brew a lager, for example. So I like the layout of this. Again, very linear, and it allows us to brew multiple batches if we want simultaneously.
And with a separate whirlpool here, you can pump your wort in and add a bunch of hops.
We can do whirlpool additions, absolutely. And we can let this sit for a little bit and let these kettle coagulants do their work and create the type of bright beer that we want while the next batch is over here boiling. So I've been pretty happy with this. This will allow us to grow as fast as we want to.
How long have you had the system?
This was probably a couple months.
So how many batches have you been able to put through it?
We're maxed at capacity right now. You got six.
Wow. So your fermenters are full?
Fermenters are full. You know, but that brings up to the next, you know, with brewing this, I mean, we could fill up our fermenters brewing, you know, once a day for 4 days, and then we're just kind of sitting around waiting. So that's why we're expanding into the next building, and we have four 25-barrel fermenters in there and two 25-barrel bright tanks. We've already ordered the manufacturing. It will be here end of March. We've got 10 50-barrel fermenters and 5 50-barrel bright tanks on their way.
Holy smokes. You guys must be selling some beer somewhere.
Well, it's the right time and the right place. You know, I feel very fortunate. You know, we have very good distributors. We've worked really hard in our pilot program. Our beer's out in 12 different locations. We're receiving a lot of feedback, and we just want to make sure that we can continue to supply beer to our customers. And I just don't want supply to be an issue, and so I think with this type of system, I think we'll be able to provide the product they need.
Well, let's move on. On down the linear chain here. We're coming up in another piece of gear here.
Yeah, this is our still, and the still, I don't know, for, I mean, I guess you can't see, but we have a very large condenser, which is coming out of the ceiling. As you, James, it comes up through the roof and back down.
Oh, okay.
So this is controlled via steam as well through a control panel. It will allow us to make very distinct cuts, and we can continue the distillation this way if we wanted to double or triple distill it. But the reality is we just want to, this is fun for me. This is kind of, I don't know, something I've always been interested in and want to do, because, I would just like to brew, distill an ESB and see what happens to it.
Yeah.
We have a lot of nice raw material here in Arkansas with different berries and fruits. I'd love to distill those and see what happens. So this is a part of the creative thing that I just want to have fun. And, at the same time, I think our customers will enjoy it as well.
So what's the capacity of this still?
This is still? 4 barrels.
How many?
4 barrels.
4 barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you did 20% of 4 barrels, then that's what you, if we had a wash in there at, say, 20% alcohol, then you can do the math on that, and that's how much we should expect out, and less the cuts that we want to remove, and make a, end up with a, hopefully a pretty good product.
So we're venturing into an area that I know very little about.
Yep.
So how does this work? First of all, there's no barrier here. I know that it seems like I've seen in some other areas there has to be a barrier between the distillery and the brewery, and because of various laws and such. But we're standing right here. I can touch the whirlpool and turn around and touch the still. It's right here.
You don't miss a thing. That's for sure. That is certainly something we're going to be working with our TTB agents on in terms of a barrier. I mean, there's some interesting laws, state laws, and they directly conflict with federal laws. And there's things we're having, things we're trying to work out. Our goal, number one today, is get our brew house running the way we like. And then next step is then moving to more the distillation side. Mm. We have the paperwork. The paperwork's done. Now it's just a matter of some final tuning to get this thing operational.
So what kinds of, first of all, the brewing equipment is double purpose, I guess,
mm-hmm.
here.
Yes. And see, when people ask me, well, how do you distill product? The first thing you have to do is learn how to make beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's why I feel like we're really doing nothing more than just extending a process that we already have done. We have the fermenters and the bright tanks in the next room. We just pump it over to the still and distill it. So from process-wise, I think distillation is very simple. I mean, you have 4 distinct cuts. You have certain temperatures that you have to hit to separate your alcohol from your wash. So I personally just think brewing, I think, is the hardest part of distilling.
Getting the raw product to go into the still.
And I understand why the government is, because distilling at home can be dangerous. I mean, I wouldn't recommend anybody using open flame when they're distilling. I'd use maybe a heat plate. Because you can't even see the alcohol vapor coming out, and you really don't want to blow up yourself, So I would just say caution to that. But I think beyond that, I think if you want to learn how to distill, go to the TTB side and get the paperwork you need to fill out, and it's a fun hobby. So.
But you can't. I mean, it's still illegal to distill your own product at home for human consumption, right?
Unfortunately, yes. I mean, I wish that would change. I mean, I think it's a little silly. I think there's brewing can be very dangerous. Mm-hmm. I remember with one of my first 3-tier gravity systems, I got a burner eye level, in my gravity. I mean, it can be very dangerous. So I think it's a little silly, a little archaic, and I think it's something that should go away. And I'll continue to push for that every chance I have.
So what products are we going to see out of
moonshine? That? We're in the Ozark Mountains. We're making moonshine, man. Yeah. We're going to make a PGA single malt, probably a Maris Otter moonshine.
Oh, wow.
And then we'll do corn liquor, which is certainly something we all love here in the Ozark Mountains. It's corn liquor.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you mean, man. And then, you know, I like peach and apple. We have a lot of peach and apple here.
Oh,
so, you know, we'll do like a Maris Otter wash and maybe mix in some ferment in some apples or peaches and then see what comes out the other end. I think it's going to be tasty, you know, and at the very least, it'll be a lot of fun.
Is this the only still in Arkansas? The only legal still in Arkansas?
No, no. There's Rock Bottom, not Rock Bottom, Rocktown Distillery in Little Rock.
Oh, okay.
And they make
okay.
good products.
Okay.
So, you know, I'd encourage if you're in Little Rock, go visit Rocktown, and they'll, I think they give tours, and yeah. So this is number two.
Wow. There it is. And I'll take pictures for the, if you'll let me, I'll take pictures for the Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Some big fermenters.
Yeah, we're in fermentation, 425 barrel fermenters. To the left here, we have a 60 barrel glycol reserve. So it's 25% glycol and the rest would be water. And that's used for cooling jackets. There's our bright tanks. This is something I'm particularly excited about. This is a yeast propagation system. So within this yeast propagation, it's steam jacketed, so we can sterilize the wort quickly. And then we have it glycol jacketed, so we can cool it quickly,
Wow. Pitch
our yeast, grow it up, and then it gets pumped into our yeast additive device all through oxygen, because we need oxygen to grow up the yeast, right? And then it gets pumped from the additive device to the fermenter at a pitch rate that would reduce our lag time.
Wow.
So it keeps it from having to be in contact with the air at all. Because again, you know, when you look at having 25 barrels of beer, pouring it down the drain just can't be an option. We just cannot have that.
Right.
So we have to take extra precaution.
So right now, are you just working with one house strain, or?
Yes, because right now we're limited. We're brewing ESB and oatmeal stout right now in this system. ESB is our staple beer. It's been selling very, very well. So that's until we expand into the next building, we're going to stick pretty much with ESB and maybe one seasonal.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. This right here is a CIP system for a clean and play system. This makes it very easy for our guys, for our cellar men to clean these things out. So they're very happy about that. This is another thing. This is a carbonation system. So we all know with pressure carbonation, it takes X amount of days for it to become permanently bonded, for the carbon dioxide for it to be carbonated. This reduces the amount of time.
Wow.
So it runs through these tubes in line being carbonated, and then it goes into the bright tanks, and we're able to turn the beer around quicker.
Wow.
This little R2-D2 looking unit is a probably the something my cellar men are beyond happy about, is an automated keg washer filler. So this will do the caustic, this will do the acid, this will do the rinse, this will do the steam, sterilize it, and then fill it automatically for these guys.
Wow.
As opposed to if anybody's busted a Sankey keg apart before and had the bloody knuckles to show it, it is not easy. And you know, with the type of volume and kegs that we have, let's see, auto screen. So it'll run through all these processes. And what we're looking at right here is just a screen that talks about how all the different processes of water, blow down, caustic, blow down, hot water, filling, pressurization, and it'll do it all manually for them. Which you just have to do it at this point.
Cool.
Right, let's sneak over to packaging.
Sure. Going through a cooler door, and this looks suspiciously like a bottling line.
Well, this is where one, a part of our process is we first do the tasting room, see if people like the beer. Next step, you start putting on draft and some draft beer accounts. We have half barrels and six barrels. Then the next step in the process is doing bombers, which like this right here. So we, the 22-ounce bombers, and start doing packaged goods with this. See how people like it. I'm holding up a 22-ounce bomber, by the way. And then if this goes well, then the next step in the process is canning. So this is a canning line.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And this canning line does about 30 cans per minute. And but with cans, a part of the capital expenditure is that you have to buy 70,000 cans minimum. And that's just one of the canning companies. The other larger one requires over 200,000.
Wow.
So the reality is, I don't mind buying the 200,000 cans, but I want different styles.
Yeah.
So I'll end up buying over more than 200,000 cans, but I'd like it to be four different styles. So that way we can give, you know, craft beer lovers, we like a lot of variety.
Mm-hmm.
So what this does is it washes the cans, it fills the cans, it seams the cans, it dries the cans, it prints the born-on date to the can, and then we palletize it here. And going back to that linear discussion, it just goes out this door, and this is where our distributors come to pick up the pallets.
Wow. Going out another door, and here's the outside.
It almost feels cool, if warm outside after being in there. And to your right, you know, one thing we built a nice deck out here, and we're in the middle of an industrial area, but that's fine. You know, I think it's fun to come to a brewery and sample different beers, and I encourage people to come out to the tasting room and hang out. We got music, we got heating lamps, just kind of a fun place, pretty low key to hang out. This is where we're expanding, and I'm pointing to the next building. We're going to go all the way to the fence, and this building essentially is one big fermentation room. That's really all it is. And we'll be able to utilize the same system and just pump it over to those fermenters.
This reminds me of Avery Brewing in Boulder, Colorado. It's in sort of an industrial area, different buildings, house, different things.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are doing what they have done, and you're just taking over.
You hit the nail on the head. Avery is one of the people we model. Because, you know, you want to follow successes, and, you know, those guys are great. They do it right, and I feel like we're not getting too far ahead of ourselves, but at the same time we're being proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a consumer, I can't stand it when I want a beer and they're like, "Ah, sorry, we're out." You know, I want my product. I want my beer when I want it.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're just very fortunate. I mean, at the end of the day, what's going to make us successful are the customers. So if we just keep our eye on the ball, make good product, then I think we'll do all right.
Now, where's the tasting room?
Come on, follow me. That's, yeah.
Not to be obvious about anything, but...
this is, we want to, at some point, expand the tasting room, because it's little bitty, but it's cozy.
Now, is this where your office
this
was
This is where
last
it was
time?
Before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now I've got my bearings,
now,
finally.
We'll grab a seat at the bar.
Boy. More welcome words were never said.
You know, everybody knows, man, brewing is really hard work, you know, but it is truly a labor of love, because how many people at the end of the day can go and drink their own product? And, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah?
It just doesn't get any better than that.
So in the past year, along with getting new equipment, you have struck up a relationship with the Hog House Brew Pub, which is the original brewery in Fayetteville. Talk a bit about that. What happened there?
Sure. Well, Julie and Carrie and I, we saw some synergies there that made sense. They have limited capacity over there. Their specialty is they're restaurant people. They're not brewers. We're not restaurant people. We make beer. And so there is an opportunity there where we can make beer for them on a much larger, a much more efficient system. And that way they could focus on their core strengths, which is their business, and we can help them on the other side. And it provides exposure for us. It provides revenue for us. It's just it's one of those, you know, I'm encouraging the people that are going to start new businesses out there, brew pubs. They ask me, what have you learned? I would say find strategic partners that like a multi-craft, an installation team. Find a brew pub who's struggling with the beer side of it and go help them out. And those are some of the keys to why we're growing at a pretty good rate.
Yeah, because that's guaranteed distribution right there.
Yeah, and you know, and what I love about it is a part of that draft beer process. We put it in this tasting room first, see how the beer goes, and then we'll put it in Hog House, see how the patrons there like it. And if we start seeing a lot of demand for it, or it flies through, then we start thinking about, okay, well, this needs to go into packaged goods. And start going to some retail outlets.
Now, are they still going to brew there? Or?
Sure. I have a couple assistant brewers, and I think it's good for those guys to brew unique varieties there that we wouldn't want to do it here on this system just because of the you don't want to risk a batch this size to hope it turns out well.
Right.
You know, so. And it's we could try new things there, and that's what I like. It's kind of a a pride series, and try it out there and see what people think of just go nuts with the whatever variety we want to make.
And that way, they maintain their brewing license there because they're still putting stuff through the system. But it's somewhere between your 40-gallon pilot system. It's a 9-barrel system.
Right.
So you get. It's just another bit of flexibility.
Absolutely, and it's also more opportunities for us to get product out in front of the customers. I love getting feedback. I mean, there's so many times I like to just go sit at the bar at Hawaii House and just hear what people think about the beer. And I've been very pleased with how what people are talking about. And that's what it all comes down to. So I think it's just been a lot of fun, a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
So a year from now, if we come back and take another tour around, what are we going to see?
Well, I would say hopefully my hair will stop turning gray so fast for sure.
Good luck with that.
But I feel like we're in a position right now that if we've got the pieces in place, we just need to execute. And we have to just, no matter how frantic things get, just keep our eye on the ball of making sure that the product is good. And if it is not good, if it's not up to our standards, it needs to go down the drain. I'm not going to put product out there that's just not acceptable. I think anybody that's brewed beer, can relate with that, because it makes us feel good when our buddy comes over and says, "Man, that's good." It makes me feel good. So next year, I hope we've got this thing streamlined and running the way we want. And because that new equipment's going to be here for the next room into March.
Mm, wow.
And that's one of the things we're just so busy right now. And I hope by that time we got a lot of filled vessels. And we hope we have a lot of happy customers and happy distributors.
Is there still a positive synergy among the budding brewing community, professional brewing community here in Northwest Arkansas?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, we're all competitive, there's no question about that. I don't think any one of those guys would say that. I think probably the sentiment is, hey, we all want everybody to succeed as long as we're number one, and that's just the nature of business. But for example, I needed a couple bags of C60 and called Ben over at Fossil Cove. He hooked me up. He needed a couple bags of Vienna. Come on over, man. So at the end of the day, my goal is not to take away Ben's business or take away Steve's business. My goal is to bring over the 93% of the mega beer drinkers into our craft world. And I think you do that with strength in numbers, and the more we can help each other, I think the more successful we'll be.
Awesome. Well, continued success.
Well, thank you so much. Anytime. I love when you guys come out here.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you, guys.
Well, thanks again to Jesse for the hospitality. After I turned off the mic, I had some little tasters of some of Jesse's brews, including their ESB, two double IPAs that I think that they brewed down in the Hog House system. Man, those were tasty. A wheat beer, which was also solid, a pumpkin beer, and the oatmeal stout, which I took a growler of the oatmeal stout home for my wife, and she really liked it as well. Really impressed with all those beers, and I can't tell you how excited I am about all the good beer being made in Northwest Arkansas right now. I know at the beginning of the show I say we're all about home brewing, and this counts because these guys are home brewers who are taking it to the next level, and I think as a journalist I have an opportunity to kind of document the birth and rise of the craft beer culture here in Northwest Arkansas. I think we've got something good going on here in the area. So we'll continue to cover craft beer in Northwest Arkansas. So look for great things in the future. And come see us. Come see these guys and taste what we've been talking about. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. Also, you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our logbooks are in the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see listening to the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there is an vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Getting Things Done, a time-saving summary of David Allen's book on productivity. I'm just waiting for the cliff notes of the time-saving summary. So the and White Lightning Clean Ride 8-ounce drip squeeze bottle, the original self-cleaning wax bicycle chain lubricant. That is a very specific product. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And man, there was a lot of stuff to choose from this week. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all. Until next time, gotta put this online before the power goes out. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson, our buddy in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We will talk to you next time, everybody. So long.